Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, and I'm joined this week by a familiar voice. I hope it's Johnny Nicol. Johnny, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing not too bad, John. It seems like things are picking up at both ends of the table. We've got quite a lot to talk about. How are you doing yourself?
Yeah, not bad. Thanks. Good to talk to you again. Johnny, I think I tried to get you a few weeks ago and you were moving house. Is that all taken care of?
Yeah, I've moved into my new stadium. I think the time that you invited me on, actually, Miyamoto got fired at Gamba, so Ben was trying to get me on the big pod as well, but I had to turn down all the offers.
Well, as long as you're turning us down equally, that's all I can ask for. I think when you're busy. Yeah, it's funny how these things come along at the worst possible moment. But thanks for coming on this time. It's good to talk to you again. No time to waste, I suppose, as you mentioned. Yeah, things are heating up. We're getting very, very close, tantalisingly close to the midway point of the J2 season, aren't we? And the don't really want to mention the word Olympics, but the kind of brief Olympic break is coming up as well. So, yeah, without further ado, Johnny, I suppose we should get into it. Before we talk about J2, in the interests of completeness, we should mention that last midweek, there were a few Emperor's Cup Round 2 games that were left over that were played, including a couple with a J2 and J3 interest. So in an all J2 clash, Okayama beat Tokyo Verde 1-0 at Nishigaoka to go into the third round of the competition. Tatsuhiko Noguchi scored the winning goal for Okayama in this one in the 61st minute. And I think Mike Innes is going to be along as usual later in J-Talk Short Corner to talk about all the J3 news. But just as a tease, there was a giant killing for J3 side Hachinohe. They won 2-1 against their J1 opponents, Yokohama FC. No such luck for another J3 side that visited a J1 rival, though, as YSCC were narrowly beaten 8-1 against the Kashima Antlers. This game played at the Keisdenki Stadium in Mito. So I think Mike's going to talk about those games a little bit more, the J3 games in JTalk Short Corner later on in this show. But let's get on to the J2 action from the weekend, round 19. And Kyoto and Iwata are still our top two in the standings, aren't they, with 41 points each. Kyoto 7 goals better off on goal difference. Both of these sides won their games by a single goal over the weekend. So we'll talk about Kyoto first, since they're the leaders. They won 2-1 at Kanazawa and got things started quite early. In just the 6th minute, Naoto Misawa sent in a rasping low drive from about 25 yards. One of the goals of the round, I think. Kanazawa did their best to come back into the game, though. Rodolfo went close with a chance that the commentator thought had gone in, but was actually wide. Shion Niwa fired a shot straight at Tomio Wakahara in the Kyoto goal as well. But Kanazawa did get a deserved equaliser just before the half hour, when Taiki Watanabe's shot from the edge of the penalty area took a deflection that took it past the goalkeeper for 1-1. Kyoto seemed to do what all good teams do, though, Johnny, and responded straight away. Just 7 minutes later, they were back in front. This was after Misawa's low diagonal ball into the box was touched in by Takumi Miyayoshi. In the second half, Peter Utaka had a couple of long-range efforts for Kyoto, but it was actually Kanazawa who came closest to scoring an equaliser when Kyohei Sugiura hit the top of the crossbar with a header from a Niwa cross. That was in the 94th minute and would surely have earned Kanazawa a point if it had gone in. So it finished, Kanazawa 1, Kyoto 2. Kyoto's first win in 4 matches after 3 straight draws, and it extends their unbeaten run to 14 matches. Meanwhile, second-placed Iwata won 1-0 at home to Jeff Chiba, with Hiroki Yamada scoring the winner in first-half stoppage time. This was after Jeff had probably been the better side up to that point in the match, it seemed from the highlights. Jeff nearly took the lead on the half-hour with a brilliant long-range effort from Takayuki Funayama that hit the crossbar. It seemed that the Iwata keeper Ryuki Mura might have got fingertips onto it, and if he did, it was a superb save. Iwata then hit Jeff with a bit of a sucker punch at the end of the first half, with Yamada controlling a cross from Yuto Suzuki on his chest and then half volleying the ball into the opposite corner for 1-0. The second half of this game was fairly uneventful until stoppage time, when Jeff's centre-back Jan Mingyu pulled back Kotaro Omori as he went clean through, picking up a red card in the process. So Jan will be suspended for Jeff's next game away at Kita Kyushu. So it finished Iwata 1, Jeff Chiba 0. 6 straight wins for Iwata, and I believe it's a club record 6 straight clean sheets as well. It's not bad for a team that had a pretty porous defence early on in the season. So Iwata purring at the moment, Johnny, and Kyoto looking good as well. What have you made of these two teams? Because I think the last time you were on, it was probably Niigata and Rikyu that were the top two. So it's Kyoto and Iwata these days. What do you think?
I think actually the last time I was on was just after Iwata beat Kyoto 4-3 at Sanga Stadium. But I think these two games, there's kind of been a theme this week of kind of genuine title challengers playing against mid-table sides and winning. So I watched the whole of the Kanazawa-Kyoto game, and I know you mentioned that chance Kanazawa had right at the end. It really should have scored, but I kind of feel that the way the game went, had it been 2-2, I think that would have been it would have flattered Kanazawa a little bit. I think Kyoto looked a much better side. Kanazawa, if I'm brutally honest, kind of like Siri, show me a mid-table J2 side, whereas Kyoto are genuine title challengers. Mizawa, obviously, he got the goal and an assist for Kyoto, but I think you mentioned that Watanabe's shot took a big deflection for Kanazawa. It was a very half-hearted attempt to kind of block him off by Mizawa at the edge of the box. And I don't really have much sympathy for teams who concede goals like that if they're going to put in that kind of defending. I think you mentioned last week with Stuart about, is it Ogiwara, the left-back for Kyoto? I thought he had a really good game bombing forward. I didn't really take him seriously because to me he looks a bit like a cross between like Gareth from the UK office or an extra from Trainspotting. So I struggled to take him too seriously, but I noticed like he's on loan from Urawa, and the kind of inherent flaw of those kind of moves is that if they do too well, like he's doing, he may kind of find himself going back. I think Urawa are playing Takehiro Akimoto at left back and just conceded 3 at home to Shonan. So I think Kyoto may struggle to turn that one into a permanent deal. With the Iwata against Jeff game, again, Jeff haven't been in great form recently, but I wrote down it's actually 9 games since their last Jeff result, like a 1-0 defeat to Sagamihara. If we're honest, that they're a mid-table team playing against a top-of-the-table side, and Iwata, as they seem to be doing, they're not playing particularly great, but they're grinding out results. And one player I wanted to mention, because he hasn't had a mention on the pod, is it Morioka? I think it's Riku Morioka, the centre-back. Because you mentioned about like they had defensive problems last season, the beginning of this year. And he's come in from Hosei University, I believe, who knocked Gamba out of the Emperor's Cup a couple of years ago. And I think he's maybe added something, a bit of dynamism at the back, but yeah, they're both Kyoto and Iwata. Wouldn't surprise me to see either of them in J1 next season. Whereas Kanazawa and Jeff, I think, are kind of, I don't really see them being anywhere near a relegation scrap. But yeah, I don't really see them challenging for the mythical top 6. So what about you, John?
I think that's very solid advice. And I've just got into my head now with Ogiwara that he's assistant to the regional manager. That's going to be in my ears for the rest of the pod, I think. Yeah, I think they're all good points. I think with Kyoto and Iwata, just based on what you were saying, I got the feeling that they're teams that have a bit of an extra gear. And I think if they'd needed it in the games over the weekend, they perhaps could have gone into that extra gear. I mean, Jeff were on top, I think, for the first half an hour or so of that game against Iwata. But you got the feeling that Iwata knew that too and were just kind of not exactly toying with them, but holding Jeff at arm's length, I think. And once they got the goal and went in front, I think they closed out the game pretty comfortably, which is not something J2 sides do with regularity. I think you know, holding on to a lead or closing out games is something at this level which is quite a rare skill to have. So, and I think Kyoto as well, it's interesting. I mean, their form, you know, 3 straight draws before this game, perhaps not that great. Surprising to see them still top, but then when you sort of place it in the context of a 14 match unbeaten run, and I think they had 6 clean sheets in a row until they had the 2-2 draw a couple of rounds ago. I think they just seem to be building up a bit of a head of steam at the moment. And I know the gap to third place is only a point, you know, and it's only 4 points then, I think, down to fourth. So they're not exactly running away with it. And I think that's one interesting thing this year. There isn't an outstanding runaway team at the top. It keeps things very interesting. I do think at the moment, yeah, Kyoto for me look like they're gonna stick around for the long haul. I think Iwata, barring some major disasters, I think they've still got room to improve, to be honest. Because yeah, when we watch them play, they're quite slick, but they don't necessarily batter anybody, I don't think. So I think they can be got at. I don't think they're world beaters, but if they do add a player or two, or click into an extra gear, they could find themselves going clear at the top. So yeah, I think we have to say, sounds like lazy punditry because they're the top two at the moment, but if you're the top two after 19 matches, you're probably doing something right, aren't you? So yeah, fair points. I pretty much agree with your comments, and I think it's good to mention Iwata. And Morioka, is that right? Morioka, has added something at the back, because they were pretty ropey. That back three was pretty creaky, wasn't it, at the start of the season? So yeah, fair play, credit where it's due. Johnny, if it's okay with you, we'll move on to talk about the erstwhile leaders, Albirex Niigata, who are now in third place, but just a point behind the top two. Niigata won for the first time in four matches on Monday night, 2-0 away at Blaublitz Akita. Now, Shion Honma, the kind of Niigata talisman, was on the bench for this game, with Shunsuke Mito starting in the wide right position in the midfield. But Honma came on for Mito in the 43rd minute after a pretty sickening kind of head. I don't know if you want to call it head or nose injury, but we'll come back. We'll circle back and talk about that in a minute. I think, Johnny, but just for the listeners, Mito clashed heads with Ryutaro Iyo, the Akita left back, in about the 15th minute, and he was okay to carry on after some treatment, which is probably a conversation in itself. But then about 10 minutes before half time, he got absolutely smashed in the face with a clearance. It's sort of funny, but he had to be taken off with probably a broken nose, judging by the audio. The microphones at the side of the pitch picked up. So Honma came on. We should mention Akita had some injuries as well in this game, didn't they? Kenichi Kaga, the centre back, had to go off with a muscle problem at around the kind of first half drinks break, and at half time their captain, the striker Ryota Nakamura, went off as well. So a bruising encounter, I think we can say. But anyway, in terms of action on the pitch, Honma put Niigata ahead. Just a few minutes after coming on in first half stoppage time, Yoshiaki Takagi took a shot from about 20 yards that Honma, who'd crept into the centre of the penalty area, was able to touch past Akita's goalkeeper Yudai Tanaka from close range. Honma went close to adding a second goal for Niigata just after the hour, but missed the target. But he was involved in Niigata's second goal just before full time, when he slipped the ball to Ken Yamura, who rolled the ball across Tanaka and into the far corner to make the game safe. There was a scare for Niigata in stoppage time, though, when Junya Suzuki, of course, scorer of a brilliant free kick away at Machida last time out, he hit the inside of the post with another fantastic free kick effort here. The rebound was actually put into the net by Kenshiro Tanioku, but he was offside, so the goal was disallowed. And keeping the injury news going, I think Yoshiaki Takagi, Niigata, left-sided attacker, he went off with about 10 minutes left. Looked like he might have picked up a muscle problem as well. So a bruising night at the office for both teams, Johnny. It finished Akita 0, Niigata 2. I think you watched this game, so what did you make of it?
Well, obviously that took a while to get through all the injuries, but if you kind of take away from that, if anyone listening hasn't seen the game, it basically went as you probably thought it would have gone. Like, Akita were organised, they were physical, but Niigata just had a bit too much flair and skill. And it's one thing that doesn't seem to get mentioned a lot on here, and I hope I'm not offending too many people, but Akita's pitch is very, very bumpy, which I think gives them an advantage in games like this against skillful sides like Niigata. But you mentioned Honma was on the bench. They had Romero Frank came back from injury. He was on the bench. Honma was on the bench. Kaito Taniguchi was on the bench. Yamura was on the bench. Like, that kind of bench strength they had, I wondered if they actually put Honma on the bench to avoid the physicality earlier on and maybe come on and have a run at kind of tired defence. But yeah, if you kind of look at the two sides in comparison, because Yoshiaki Takagi, he got the assist for Honma's first goal. That's 18 direct goal involvements, 7 goals, 11 assists. Akita have scored 17 goals all season, so that kind of gives you some kind of context. And I know Yudai Tanaka was very frustrated when he didn't keep out that second goal, but realistically, I think 2-0 was quite a fair reflection on the way the game had gone. Coming back again to that, the Mito, the potential concussion incident, I mean, obviously, neither of us are doctors, but he did look like he whacked his head off Io. I don't think he was unconscious when he went down, because he kind of turned his body so he didn't bang his head, but it wasn't very good optically. They seemed to check the concussion very quickly, and he was just like, thumbs up, yeah, I'm okay, and that was it. So I'm more in favour of, you know, the kind of rugby system where, like, they have a rolling sub, so they take the player off and they can bring someone on for 5 minutes and have them properly checked. I think they have to kind of move towards that kind of thing rather than just, yeah, mate, I'm all right, and let them keep going. What do you think about that, John?
I think this is something that, you know, with apologies to long-term listeners, I think Stu and I have banged the drum on for you know many times. I think we have to get away from a system of, first of all, players shouldn't be able to decide for themselves whether they carry on or not. Yeah. They shouldn't be asked, are you okay? Do you want to carry on? Because 9 out of 10 footballers are going to say, yes, I'm fine. Yes, I want to carry on. So we've got to take that decision away from them, I think. And yeah, I don't think players should be assessed by a team doctor. I think they should be assessed by an independent doctor. I'm not a rugby, I don't watch rugby, so I don't know how it works there, but perhaps it's like that. They're assessed by someone independently.
I believe so.
Yeah. Not by a team doctor, yes. And I think, yeah, they shouldn't be allowed to come back on unless an independent doctor says they're okay to come on. And to be honest, I would even say if that's too difficult to facilitate, I would say then players just have to go off anyway and don't come back on. I think we are heading towards, I do sense we're heading towards some kind of tipping point on this. And I think my son's 8 years old now, and I'm sure 10 years from now I'll be watching football on TV and I'll say, oh, in my day, yeah, you just get up and say you're okay, and he'd be looking at me like I'm insane. I don't think anybody listening to this or anyone in football would disagree with what we're saying. I think it's just a case now of FIFA and UEFA and the people, you know, stakeholders have got to try and figure out a way to actually integrate it. But I think it's coming, because yeah, we can't be having this kind of thing, can't we? I think I'm mixing tracks here, but I think there was a concussion incident. Was it an Austrian player in the Euros, perhaps in the round that took place sort of early in the morning for us, Japan time? But I think, yeah, we've got to get away from asking players that have just been, like, you know, smacked in the face, are you okay? You know, yes. just because you can see how many fingers I'm holding up doesn't mean you're ready to, like, you know, go back and play football. So, yeah, I totally agree. And I think just to piggyback on that point about Shion Honma being kept on the bench to protect him, if you like, he's known to have a bit of a temper on him, isn't he? Yes. And I think he has had a red card already this season and last season as well. So I think if he was on the receiving end of some rough treatment, there's a potential of him to lose his cool. So I think perhaps that was quite smart management to leave him on the bench for the early stages. But yeah, I think for Niigata, you know, there's been a lot of questions asked of them the last month or so, because they've been out of form, haven't they? And they've lost a lot of that sort of pizzazz that they had in the first 2 or 3 months of the season. So I think you're right that this, in the end, was a fairly comfortable win, at least on paper and based on the highlights. I think it was a potential banana skin. I think it could have gone wrong for them. So I think they produced a pretty professional performance to get the job done. Akita, I don't think Akita is necessarily a fortress to go to, but when you're out of form, you mentioned, it's not an easy place. You know, it's not easy to go and get a win and a clean sheet. So yeah, we've got to say fair play to Niigata, I think. And yeah, best wishes to Shunsuke Mito. And all of the other injured players from that game. I think this very busy treatment room at the final whistle in that one. Johnny, we'll move on and talk about the team in fourth place. It's FC Ryukyu. It was a bad weekend for them. They lost 3-0 away at Fagiano Okayama, didn't they? Okayama gave a debut to their young goalkeeper, Togo Umeda, who's on loan at the club from Shimizu S-Pulse. He made an absolutely brilliant save from Shintaro Shimizu early on to keep the scores level in this one. Okayama took the lead about 3 minutes before half-time when Kiwara Miyazaki hit the post, but Satoki Uejo was on hand and able to fire the loose ball into the empty net for 1-0. In the second period, Umeda, the goalkeeper, was busy again, this time making a great save from Koya Kazama. Okayama then took the game away from Ryukyu with two pretty astonishingly good goals by Okayama standards. On the hour, Ryo Kawamoto dispossessed Tetsuya Chinen and then played in Eiji Shirai, who cracked in an unstoppable shot to make it 2-0. And then 6 minutes from full time, Cheenan's centre-back partner, Lee Yong-jik, lost possession in the left-back spot. And when the ball was crossed into the box, rookie Takaya Kimura produced a fantastic body swerve and a thunderous shot into the roof of the net to seal the win in fine style. So Okayama 3, Ryukyu 0. For Ryukyu, it's just two wins in their last eight games, which sounds terrible. But on the other hand, they're still only 4 points off the promotion places. So that's pretty good. So it's kind of depends whether you're glass half full or half empty on that one. And I mentioned just one other game before I come back to you, Johnny. The fifth place team, Nagasaki, they made it five straight wins with a fairly comfortable 2-0 win away at Tochigi, at a very rainy Kanseki Stadium. Nagasaki went in front in the 30th minute. Their left-back Hijiri Kato's brilliant cross was headed in by Ken Tokura. I think Tokura scored a header from a Kato cross in the previous round as well, so that's becoming a bit of a hotline for them. Both sides traded chances until Nagasaki got their second goal in the 73rd minute. Kato was involved again as his corner kick was headed past his own goalkeeper by Kisho Yano, the veteran forward usually so deadly at set-piece situations, unfortunately in the wrong box. The wrong box this time, so an own goal from him. And yeah, finished Tochigi 0, Nagasaki 2. Nagasaki moving very smoothly through the gears at the moment, Johnny. Possible outside chance of them making it into the top two. But yeah, what's your reaction? Okayama 3, Ryukyu 0, and Tochigi 0, Nagasaki 2.
Well, I actually wanted to ask you something about both Ryukyu and Nagasaki. So I'll talk about the Okayama game first, and then we can kind of go on to Tochigi next. But I think Okayama are quite a difficult team to pin down their real level, because their defence, in terms of goals conceded, they're third best. So they've got an elite level defence for this J2. And then in attack, when it clicks, as it did last week, you've got Satoki Uejo, Eiji Shirai, Ryo Kawamoto, who last year, the last game of J1, Gamba lost 2-0 at home to Shimizu. It was a dead rubber, but he obviously had something to play for, and he looked like a really good player in J1. So I think that they obviously have attacking talent when it does go right. If it was to start completely unfounded transfer rumours, they might say that Okayama have asked Espoz for another player on loan, and Espoz have said, well, you better start playing Umeda, because there didn't really seem to be any reason to drop Kanemori, but then Umeda's come in and done really well. So yeah, there you go. I think the main thing I wanted to talk about was Ryukyu. So I want to know if you think I've been a bit harsh here. I think if they don't start to kind of pick up within the next 5 to 10 games, if they start to look like they're not going to be able to challenge for first or second, but they're still comfortably be the top six, top eight, they need to start thinking about next season, which is easy to say for me because it's not my head in the chopping block. But I think the game the previous week, they strolled past Giravansk Kitakyushu without really getting out of second gear. I think they need to look at Kitakyushu and say that can't be us next season. Because I know you kind of talked about this a little bit with Stuart, but I think Taguchi, Chine and Ikeda, they'll all be targets for J1 clubs. And I think Stuart was mentioning about Tanaka and Koya Kazama, they might be able to keep. I think there could still be a lot of offers for them from other J2 sides. Because if you think Uejo and Tokumoto have gone to Okayama, Ryukyu are not a very rich team. And then you've got Uesato and Abe, who are probably coming towards the end of their kind of shelf life as starters. I know Ryukyu they've basically played the same team all season, barring injuries. And they've got a few kind of younger players or players they've brought in for university. So I'd like to see them give some of these guys a chance, so it's not a complete rebuild job in the off season and kind of worrying about the bottom half of the league next year. Would you say I'm being a bit too harsh there, John?
Well, I think you're being realistic. I think I would romantically give them maybe another, maybe 10 more games. Maybe when they get to see where they are at round 28, round 30, and then make a call. But I think you're right. And one player that I'm not sure if you mentioned who I would be trying desperately to keep is Junto Taguchi, the goalkeeper who's been excellent for them until he got injured recently. I think Ryukyu, it's unfortunate they're having such a good season. This season, they're a great top six team. But this is the maybe the second worst season in history to be a top 16. Last season being the worst because the playoffs were cancelled, and it's the same again this year. So what's going to happen, I think, is any team that finishes third to sixth this year is going to have, their players are going to come under scrutiny from other teams, aren't they? From bigger teams and rival teams. But you're not getting the benefit of having a shot at the playoffs and a shot at a promotion. So I mean, extrapolating, you know, it would be better for them to sink down the table a little bit, you know, and throw a lot of these potential suitors for the star players off the scent. But yeah, it's a tricky one. I think what I will say is I've kind of been, and I don't mean this in a mean way, but just as a kind of J2 watcher, I've kind of been thinking for weeks, I've been waiting for Ryukyu to start kind of falling away because I thought that was inevitable, and it hasn't happened really. And they did have, yeah. I will just sound one note of, I think they lost 3-0 away at Machida, didn't they? In a midweek game a couple of months ago, and I kind of felt like, well, that's it, the bubble's burst, but they bounced straight back, and I think they won the game after that and got back on the horse, so we'll see. I think they got a couple of injuries, haven't they? Junto Taguchi, the keeper's injured, they got an injury, I forget the player's name, but important centre-back's injured.
Okazaki?
Yes, thank you, yes. So I think that means that there's pressure on. You know, Chinen was the his centre back. He was very weak in possession last year. He's been great this year, but he made a mistake for the second goal away at Okayama, and you know, has to be careful that kind of doesn't creep back into his game from last year. And Lee Yong-jik, again, top guy as a centre back. I don't think it's his best position. I think it's problem there that they have at the moment. So I don't see them sliding too far because I think the nucleus of the very good teams, especially at the front, like midfield and up front. But I think 2 wins in 8 plus their injuries mean that I think they might have. It's another question of whether they had a genuine chance of a top two finish. But I think they're going to have to, you know, write things very quickly if that chance is going to stay alive for this season. But Okayama, a weird one, the kind of team that you sort of wouldn't pick, I think, to watch if you had the pick of the games, because they are often quite boring. I also really like Ryo Kawamoto. He's like a taller version of a Daiki Suga from Sapporo, and he has that kind of explosive kind of. He can generate a lot of power in a shot without much backlift as well.
I think he needs some kind of nickname as well. Maybe if people want to tweet in, like barrel chested or some sort of play on that.
Barrel chest is gone. What other things can go with? I was going to say what other things go with chested, but I think I'll walk that back quite quickly, knowing it's mainly male, probably male dominated listenership. So we perhaps don't want to go down that route. He's been impressive. But I think with Okayama, they're kind of a streaky team. Like, I think they can score 3 goals and win a game now and again. I think there was it 3-1 away at Matsumoto a couple of rounds ago.
Yes.
But you just don't know which. I mean, I think Jeff sort of criticised fairly for, like, you never know which Jeff you're going to get. But I think Okayama are perhaps in the same boat on a slightly smaller, more provincial scale. Of you're never quite sure whether you're going to get an easy game or a hard game from them. But they're quite a rugged team, and it's always 4-4-2, whichever personnel are available. I don't think that changes very much. They're usually pretty obdurate, I think, I would say. But they just added, for some reason, in the last sort of quarter of that game against Ryukyu, they added flair. Like, from no, I've never seen Eiji Shirai do that before. Sometimes score a low shot from about 15 yards, but to actually sort of go round someone, I don't know where that came from, but fair play. I think they were worthy winners. But for Ryukyu, like I said, I've seen them do that before away at Machida, and they bounce straight back. I think every team has an off day, don't they, from time to time. So yeah, I wouldn't count them out just yet, but I think they do need to try and right the ship quite soon if they're not going to be heading in the wrong direction, you know, heading down the table rather than back up to the top two. All right, Johnny. Yeah, thanks for the analysis so far. All good stuff. I think. Any comments on Nagasaki before we?
Yes. Well, I was just going to say, because we talked about them before about how realistic their chances of going up to J1 are, and we'll probably come on to later. They're at home to Iwata next week, and if they win that, they're within 5 points. But yeah, that's 5 wins, 5 clean sheets in a row. They're unbeaten under the new coach. I quite like the look of the Wellington Hato, or Wellington Hat, if you type it into Google Translate. I think he's a bit like Elber at Yokohama F. Marinos. He's a bit less like mercurial than the usual Brazilians. He might be a solid kind of 7 out of 10 every week, whereas like Luan's maybe a 10 one week and a 4 the next. But I think the team's kind of a bit better for it. I would say maybe if you compared like Nagasaki to Iwata or Kyoto, maybe like the weakest link in an average Nagasaki starting 11 would be weaker than their counterpart at Jubilo and Kyoto. But if you were to say to me, like, Edgar Junior, Utaka and Lukian are all out for the rest of the season, I think that would affect Nagasaki the least, because they share the goals around and the creativity around a bit more. You know, you've got Kaio Cesar, or you've got Maikuma, Ken Takura, Togashi, they can all kind of come in and do something. But what I really wanted to ask about was actually, because you're a father and I'm not, and I noticed that the four times in this game week, the players whipped out, you know that from USA 94, the Bebeto and Romario kind of baby rocking celebration? That celebration annoys me, and I want to know if other people feel the same way, because when Bebeto did it, he had personally become a father and he scored the goal. Whereas in Japan, it seems like, because it was Nagasaki's goalkeeper had become a father, so it seems to be like if anyone in the team became a father and they score a goal, they all do it.
Yeah, I think originality in goal celebrations is important. And I think yes. Kyoto seemed to have stopped doing it now, but they had a fit. I don't know whether chose not allowing that kind of thing anymore on pain.
Doesn't
pain
really of, seem like it's his cup of tea. Balls.
Yeah, you don't want to rub him up the wrong way, do you? So but I think I did notice a lot of baby cradling celebrations, the Bebeto celebration going on. I think it should be reserved for special occasions. And I think definitely having the entire like 11 outfield players do it. If I was the referee, I would let the other team kick off. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't let them finish the baby rocking before they carry on. So we're sounding like grumpy old men and killjoys, Johnny. But I do actually agree. I think
I want to make it clear. I'm not against people celebrating the birth of their child. Just show some originality is my basic point.
It's not childbirth in general that you've got a problem with. Yes, that's good. I don't have to like edit this bit out. Then that's pleasing. Yeah. As a father, what happened to ripping the corner flag up and pretending to machine gun the crowd? That's
Jefferson Baiano.
Yeah, that's right. Bring back the Jefferson Baiano. Yeah, and I think Mike's probably going to talk about angry goal celebrations as well. Like Brenner. Brenner was not happy when he scored in J3 over the weekend. So that's there. You know, there's a tease. Tease for the short corner coming up later. I think take your point about Nagasaki. I've been impressed at how much of a team player Edgar Junior has been. He hasn't just been the kind of cheat code of scoring goals and not doing much else. I think they've actually done a good job of integrating him into the way that they play. I've also noticed, I think it's probably too simplistic to pin it on Kaio Cesar, but he's playing well again. And he's carrying the ball forward and looks like, whether it's the change of coach or just his form improving, I don't know, but he's the real key for me. I think if he's playing well, Nagasaki are playing well, and it's not that they're a one-man team, but he's so very important for them. So it's all looking good, and I think we're gonna come on to talk about the weekend fixtures later, but I believe it's Nagasaki against Iwata coming up at the weekend. So gonna be big, gonna be interesting. Johnny, thanks so much for your thoughts so far. We're going to take a short break now for some music and refreshments. When we come back, let's talk about the wrong end of the table and round up the rest of the J2 action as well. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. Johnny and I are suitably refreshed, I think. So we'll move on and wrap up the rest of the J2 action from the weekend. Johnny, we'll switch gears and look at the bottom of the table. First of all, where in last place, Sagamihara look pretty doomed, don't they? They were beaten 2-0 at home by Tokyo Verdy. I think that's their seventh defeat in a row, and they haven't managed a goal in any of those matches. Verdy's opener came just before half-time with a near-post header from Jin Hanato. This came from a Yuhei Sato corner. I think the Sagamihara keeper, Akihiko Takeshige, he was playing for the first time since round one in this game. He might be disappointed that he couldn't keep out this this header, but it was 1-0 just before half time. In the second half, Verdy's centre back Masashi Wakasa did brilliantly to block a goal bound effort from Yuri. We don't have a block of the round segment, but if we did, that would probably be absolutely brilliant defending. Verdy then sealed the points with a fine solo goal from Harrier Ide on 66 minutes. I think if you wanted to see where Sagamihara's problems lie, this goal was a good example. He had all the time and space in the world to slot home from around about the penalty spot. So Sagamihara 0, Tokyo Verdy 2, the final score. Omiya Ardija are still second bottom. This is after a goalless draw, 0-0 away at the 17th place side. Matsumoto. I thought, based on the highlights, Omiya were the better side by miles in this game, Johnny. Matsumoto's performance was pretty abject. Iba could have won it for Omiya with about 15 minutes to go, but he had a shot that hit the outside of the post. An excellent cross from Eitaro Matsuda to find him, we should mention. It was nice to see him getting some playing time. So Omiya draw for the second game in a row under their new boss, Masahiro Shimoda. And it's also time for a coaching change at Matsumoto. After this pretty disappointing performance, their coach Kei Shibata was fired. And it's since been confirmed that Hiroshi Nanami, Japan national team, legend, of course, and ex-Jubilo Iwata manager, he's taken over. This draw was Matsumoto's first point in five matches, although it wasn't enough to save Shibata's job, as we mentioned. And they're only 2 points outside the drop zone, 19 points from 19 matches so far. So, I think Sagamihara 0, Tokyo Verde 2, the scoreline tells us everything we need to know. But, what about Matsumoto 0, Omiya 0, Johnny?
I think my first line of my notes about this game said the word terrible and just left it at that. I think it summed up both teams' performances, especially Matsumoto's. I know we talked about this quite a lot in the green room before we came on. And I noticed, I think I might be quite guilty of this along with other people. We tend to judge a lot of like J League clubs, like criticize them, but we hold them to the same standards we might hold a team that's been kind of successful in Europe for like decades. And you're watching the Chris's Lost in Football video, the Lost in Football Nagano. I'd forgot, you kind of forget with Matsumoto because they've got a big following. They've been in J1 a couple of times. They've actually only been like a professional club in the J League since 2012. And there's a few other teams out there like that, like Ryukyu, Kanazawa, Machida. Often we sort of criticise decision-making as being like amateurish. In some ways, it kind of is. Like obviously, they've brought in Nanami, who's a big name in Japanese football, more from his playing time and his time in like Yabechi Stadium than actually as a manager. And he might bring a degree of professionalism, or some of the players have been at Marinos or Cerezo. But yeah, there's a lot of things going on there. It's not really in keeping with they've almost grown too quickly. And, you know, the last time I was on, I was kind of slagging them off because they had way too many players. And in Kyoto, had way too many players. But Cho has very quickly worked out who the best players are. Whereas any given Matsumoto lineup seems to have about four players I would consider to be fullbacks in it. And yeah, I think you mentioned Kawai from Ryukyu. He's playing a slightly different system, or Suzuki's dropped back a little bit. Players are either in a second position for them or they're slightly out of position. And yeah, I still feel like I don't think Matsumoto will be bad enough to go down, especially with Nanami coming in. And also, as we mentioned, Miura, who was fired by Sagamihara, he's gone in as a kind of first-team coach, I think. But yeah, I think Nanami really has to go in, put out the fire, quickly identify who's good enough and who's not good enough, what formation they're going to play next season, and try and get to that place with the minimum number of changes as possible, not signing 20 players from all manner of J1, J2, university and high schools, and trying to fit them together in like 6 weeks pre-season camp. I mean, do you have any more to add to that, John?
Well, yeah, I think you've said it all on Matsumoto. I think what I try and do when I watch, whether it's a full game or highlights, I want to see, you know, what the team is trying to do. And Matsumoto this season, we're 19 games in. I haven't seen any evidence of a sort of coherent tactical plan. I think you're right that none of the players ever stand out for playing well. They only stand out for playing badly or making mistakes. The only exception to that for me, and I'm sure I've mentioned it, Ryo Toyama out on the right has looked really good. I like the look of him. But apart from that, they've been quite boring. Kunitomo Suzuki had some good games, had a bit of a purple patch a month or so ago, but that seems to have faded now. But yeah, it's just... They seem to be working very hard when they're playing, but it's also very hard work to watch them because you can't work out what they're trying to do. And I think they might need wholesale changes, but not right now because they're in the middle of I think a relegation battle. Even though they're 2 points outside the drop zone, and that's almost nothing. So I think Nanami's an interesting appointment because he. Very charismatic guy. I think he's taken Jubilo down from J1, then back up. So whether that makes him a success or not, I think the jury's still out. But I think it's pretty obvious that they had to change. I think whatever Kei Shibata had done with the team last season, his credit was all but exhausted after how poor they've been in the first half of this year. So changing the manager was inevitable, and we'll wait and see. Bringing in Miura is an interesting choice. I mean, he does know a bit about the bottom of J2, I suppose, after the first 13 or so rounds of this year. But I think that's a little bit of an unfair comment, because obviously the squad that he had at Sagamihara is very, very weak, as we've established. But yeah, I'm going to be watching. Matsumoto's a team that you always watch with interest because of the points you mentioned. It is, to all intents and purposes, and the definition of this may vary from fan to fan, but it is a big club at this level. You know, even if I take your point, I think you're right, it's a relatively young, or if you want to use the word immature, you know, in that sense, team. I think that's true. An immature club, should we say, in terms of like professional status. But yeah, when you have a stadium that impressive and that many fans in it, your eyes drawn to their results, I think. So yeah, we'll wait and see. I tend to agree with you. I think they'll be just about okay, but I think their watchword for the rest of the season is just going to be grinding out results. I don't think it's going to be too pretty, unfortunately. What about Omiya? I thought you might be a bit more impressed with them than you sound like you were. I thought they is the kind of game where they could have wilted and lost 3-0, but I thought they took the game to Matsumoto and probably should have won.
I think this might be kind of Omiya's problem, in that they've lost at home to Ehime, and the last time it was on, they'd lost to Sagamihara, but then they played really well at home to Niigata and they lost, and they played well in this game and they drew. So they're playing well and not picking up wins, and they're playing badly and losing as well. So I think you mentioned a few weeks ago about like their striking options, like the current version of Iba and Haskich and Nakano and Yajima. I mean, there's 20 goals between those four players, but it's taken kind of four players to get that 20 goals, whereas like Peter Utaka will score that by himself for Kyoto. I guess, I mean, that kind of runs through the Japanese game from top to bottom, that kind of quantity over quality issue. You mentioned Matsuda, who you said had quite a good game. I think I wrote down like him and Matsumoto, who's come in from Sanfrecce, and they brought in Kushibiki. None of those signings have particularly worked, and they're all quite, like, from the outside looking in, objectively players who should be good enough to play at this level. And then I've noticed as well, like Shimada Kanazawa, he's on loan from Omiya, and then Noriyoshi Sakai, he's gone out to Sagantosu, a permanent deal, and he's done all right for them. I always worry, because Matsumoto were in this situation last year when they were loaning players out like Shimokawa or Ando, who are doing well at teams higher up the league. It's never a good look. I think the problems at Omiya run a lot deeper than just the playing squad. I think that there's issues with management and recruitment and all sorts of off the field issues. Any more to add to that?
I think we do have people who are better connected with Omiya who we can get on the pod to answer. So I think, based on what I see on the pitch, I think that's right. I still think I have a sneaking suspicion, and I don't have any inside evidence or any inside track on this, but I do think maybe Docomo, as the controlling interest, maybe not that interested right now.
Yes.
In actually sort of you know, moving the team forward in a financial sense. I don't know if that's true, but it's just that's the impression you get from the transfer business and the state of the state of the playing squad. They do have good young players coming through, and I think maybe bringing in Shimoda as the manager is an attempt to kind of maximize the potential from their youth system and their academy, because, you know, Saitama is a huge catchment area. Even if you have Urawa on your doorstep, there's loads of young players that you could bring through at Omiya, I think. In terms of the squad for this season, I mean, I think it's the same as Matsumoto. It's kind of been a bit of a basket case. I think if they had the time, they'd blow it up and start again, but they don't. They have to work with what they've got. I think with Iba, he there's no way he can be match fit at this point, because he's played hardly any football for the best part of the year. But what I will say, and this is just based on the last couple of games, and Matsumoto was so poor the weekend, we can't judge just on that game, but the ball just automatically spends more time in the other team's final third when Iba plays. Like, the ball just sticks up there for longer. I haven't got any stats to back this up other than watching it, but trust me, if you watch the matches, the ball sticks to him a lot better, and he protects it well and usually finds a teammate. And I think if you have a player, I used to say he was a guaranteed source of goals at J2 level. I'm not sure yet now because he's a bit older and he's been out for a long time with injuries. But he's a guaranteed sort of ball magnet. Like the ball will just stay, you know, on the edge of the penalty area with him a lot more than with their other options. So I think perhaps keeping him fit and getting him in the team will help. You know, I think if you remember that Yokohama FC team that he was such an important part of, they had to, like, two quick wingers either side of him. If Matsuda can be the winger on the right, and they can, I don't know, there must be players, somebody who can play on the left to help out on that side. They might be able to turn it round. But I think, I have to go back to Mike Innes's point from, you know, a week ago of, you know, after 19 matches, if you've got 13 points, it's very hard to be optimistic about the second half of the season, isn't it? But I think Omiya, they clearly got the personnel to be okay this year, but it's just a question of extracting those performances out of them. And I think it's also a good point that, when you play well and don't win, that's also a problem in and of itself, isn't it? Because you're going to eventually run out of games, patting yourself on the back, saying, oh, well, we played well, but we only drew. Hopefully we'll win next week. You know, eventually you run out of next weeks, don't you? Even in a 42-game season. So, it's interesting. But I think if I were an Omiya supporter, I would take a lot of encouragement from particularly the first half of this game. When I thought if they could have just hit the target once, if they could have got one goal, I think Matsumoto would probably have folded at that point, and Omiya could have gone on and won. So it's a bad 0-0 draw in the sense that they should have won, but I do think it gives them, at least in terms of performance, it is a bit of a platform for them to build on for the next game. And I think they'll be grasping at any positives they can get right now. So, talking of getting positives where you can, we'll move on, Johnny, to the team in third bottom at the moment, Kita Kyushu. They made it three straight defeats, going down 2-0 at home against Ehime. This match, it was all Kita Kyushu for the first quarter, wasn't it? But they couldn't score. We talked about this already in the green, but Ehime's formation was listed as a 5-1-2-2 on the DAZN graphic. But I've never seen that before, so I'm not really sure. Not really sure what the deal was with that. But it was all Kita Kyushu early on, but it was 0-0 until the 40th minute when Ehime hit their hosts with a bit of a sucker punch. A long ball set Yoshiki Fujimoto away down the right, and his low cross was met by Makito Yoshida to make it 1-0 to the visitors. And then the last 5 minutes of the first half was pivotal to the whole game, really, wasn't it? Almost straight away, Kita Kyushu had the chance to equalise after they robbed Ehime along their own back line. But Zen Cardona shot weakly at Yota Akimoto, Ehime goalkeeper. The chance was wasted. And then just before the break, it was 2-0. This time it was Fujimoto himself scoring with a searing effort from outside the box. It just faded away into the top corner. An absolutely brilliant goal, and his sixth goal of a pretty impressive season, it has to be said. It finished Kita Kyushu 0, Ehime 2. A first win in four games for Ehime, and it keeps them a point outside the drop zone. And before I come back to you, Johnny, I'll mention Gunma. They're the other team in the relegation zone at the moment. They stay fourth bottom. This is after losing 1-0 at home to Machida. A first defeat in four matches for Gunma. Fairly unusual goal to win this game for Machida at a 34th minute corner. Taiki Hirato sent in a daisy cutting low ball to the near post where a Gunma defender stuck out a leg, which sent the ball onto the post. It came back off the upright to Kaishu Sano, who I think is just a game or two back from a long-term injury. He fired in from close range. So, weird goal. And I don't want to say this was a poor game, Johnny, but if you watch the DAZN highlights like I did, the first highlight was a 40-yard effort from the Gunma right back, which was well wide. The second highlight was a 40-yard effort from a Gunma centre back, which went well wide. So, putting two together, I think this was perhaps not a classic. But, Kita Kyushu 0, Ehime 2, and Gunma 0, Matsuda 1. What do you think?
I think for Kita Kyushu, Ehime, what I wrote was the word timing, because Kita Kyushu have probably got the worst timing out of any team in Japanese football, finishing fifth last year when, as you said, the playoffs were cancelled, and then getting robbed of all their players when there's four teams going down from J2. I've actually watched Kita Kyushu a few times, and the midfield is actually pretty good. But as you mentioned, we mentioned in the green room, that Cardona missing that chance, it was easier than the one Fujimoto had. Very similar chances. Fujimoto took his, Cardona just hit straight at the goalkeeper. Ehime, as opposed to Kita Kyushu, they've got pretty good timing. They've had a couple of like horrendous results recently. It was a 5-1 at home to Mito. But you could probably argue that even if they played well, they might have lost that anyway. They're kind of balancing it out, though, with like a win, draw, loss sort of thing. And I think that's them out of the relegation zone. And they brought in, we mentioned as well, like Kaise Ishii from Sagan Tosu, who I think he's kind of a second striker, maybe play off Fujimoto. He looked pretty good in spells last year for Tosu. It's interesting you mentioned Iba, like the kind of effect he has, even if he's not scoring goals or really doing much, he's just getting the ball, keeping the ball in a dangerous area. Kita Kyushu really need to bring in someone like that. Someone like Saldana, Lukian, Iba, that maybe not that good, but someone who can score even 5 or 6 goals in the second half of the season, even occupy defenders, allow the kind of good quality midfielders like Takahashi, Mayakawa, Harigaya, like more space, or else I think I struggle at the moment. They're like Omiya, they're playing quite well in too many games and not getting anything. I think I struggle to see them finishing higher than 19th unless they can bring in a striker. With Gunma Machida, I know you mentioned a few weeks ago about Genki Omai. He's got that kind of Panenka penalty last week, 7 assists. Gunma's problem is that their top scorer's got 3 goals, Toshiya Tanaka, 3 goals and 3 assists. And outside of him and Omai, no one's really contributing anything. They brought in 6 players from universities last winter. They've only got like 5 starts out of all those 6 players. And, you know, like Nanase Ino went to Tosu. Okamura, he's at Sapporo. Very, very difficult players for them to replace. I mean, I could see either Kita Kyushu or Gunma staying out of the relegation zone, but I feel like both are more likely to be in there than out. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think on Kita Kyushu, what's killed them, just talking about up front, is losing Machino and Di Saro, I think, in the same
Suzuki as well.
Yeah, if they could have just kept one of those three, then you might have your sort of 5 or 6 goal, target man or focal point of the attack, like you mentioned. I think Cardona could grow into that. He's young, isn't he? But he's not ready for prime time just yet. I think Kita Kyushu almost play too much nice football. I think they've got a bit of a soft centre, and that can be ruthlessly exposed, I think, when you're down at the bottom of the table. So yes, I agree. I think they play quite pretty football, but not always that effective. So I think that's always going to keep you in trouble. I think for Gunma, yeah, Genki Omai is the kind of player that you can sort of hang your hat on up front, but I think it's pretty much everywhere else on the pitch where they've got issues, isn't it? And I think, as I mentioned, you know, the is it Christopher Kinjo who's playing at right back at the moment?
Justin Kinjo.
Yeah. Maybe it's his brother. Christopher might be his brother. Anyway, yeah, his 40-yard pot shot came in the first minute of that game. So it's not like an all options exhausted last gasp thing. It was like that's what's considered a good idea early doors, you know. And I think that shows you that they're perhaps struggling just to work the ball forward. Get it through the midfield to Genki Omai. Genki Omai is a mercurial talent, but he can't do anything if he hasn't got the ball. Doesn't see it often enough in that team. And Gunma, they're a weird team. They're kind of like a sort of pound shop Okayama in the sense that they can turn in a really good performance. And they occasionally have a game that you watch, you're like, oh, I wonder what all the fuss is about. They'll be fine. But that's once every 6 or 7 games, I think. Yeah. And if you watch one of the other 5 or 6 games in that sequence, you're left kind of thinking, Jesus, it's going to be a hard summer/autumn. And yeah, I think they're lacking, on a bad day, they look like Sagamihara, like really, really hard working, but just lacking any kind of end product, you know? And then on a good day, they can look more like a sort of Yamaguchi of recent weeks, or even Ehime, a bit more kind of a swashbuckling up front. So it's touch and go. I think there are some good players in the team, but we're almost at the halfway stage, and yeah, with Kita Kyushu there in the bottom 4, and I think that probably tells you all you need to know. But I still think, you know, nobody's, maybe Sagamihara we can say are adrift, you know, we're going to be adrift, but the rest I think have got it all to play for. So we'll have to wait and see. But I think all valid points, and yeah, you can't just rely on Genki Omai to do everything for you, can you? You got to help him out a little bit more. So, okay, Johnny, a couple of games to catch up on before we sign off. There was a bit of a banger at the JIT Recycle Inc. Stadium, which I'll never tire of saying. Kofu and Yamaguchi drew 2-2. Fairly ridiculous end-to-end game, this one. It felt more like an end-of-season match, didn't it? Yamaguchi should have been in front in just the second minute here, but Yatsunori Shimaya somehow volleyed over from close range on a quick breakaway. Yamaguchi had another chance to score when Kazuma Takai had a volley saved by Kosuke Okanishi in the Kofu goal. So somehow it was 0-0 at half time. But Yamaguchi did go ahead in the 51st minute when Ayumu Kawai headed in a corner from Joji Ikegami. So 1-0 to Yamaguchi in the 51st minute. That lead only lasted for 4 minutes, though. Jin Izumisawa played in Sho Araki on the left side of Yamaguchi's penalty area, and his low cross was turned in by a combination of two onrushing Kofu players, plus Yamaguchi defenders Hirofumi Watanabe and Henan. I think an own goal was the official verdict, and I think the J-League website says Henan got the last touch. So, yeah, there you go. So 1-1. Yamaguchi kept going, and they nearly retook the lead when, from another Ikegami corner, Takai volleyed a low shot against the post, and Yamaguchi thought they'd won it when they scored again. 9 minutes from time, the Kofu keeper Okanishi spilled a long-range effort from Hiroto Ishikawa straight to the youngster Riku Kamigaki, and the rookie gleefully snaffled up the opportunity to make it 2-1. Kofu came back again, though, and equalised with a thumping rising drive from Jin Izumisawa just 4 minutes after going behind. So yeah, again, 4 minutes after conceding, they equalise, and it finished Kofu 2, Yamaguchi 2. Kofu in 6th and Yamaguchi 15th. Kofu without a win in their last 4, and Yamaguchi no wins in their last 5. So perhaps we should have anticipated a draw in this game. And last on the slate, Johnny, I'll mention this game before I come back to you for a comment. Yamagata won 1-0 away at Mito, with Ibuki Fujita scoring the winner with a very nicely taken strike just outside the box from just before the hour mark. This was after Jalan Rishon Sumiyoshi had given the ball away out of the Mito defence. So for Yamagata, winning 1-0 away at Mito, 5 wins and a draw from Peter Klimovsky's 6 matches in charge, making management look very easy at the moment. And they're 8th in the table at the moment. So Johnny, Kofu 2, Yamaguchi 2, Mito 0, Yamagata 1. And any comments on these games?
I'll maybe talk about the Mito Yamagata first, because I wanted to ask you something about Kofu later. I watched the whole of the Mito Yamagata game. I think it was quite a good advert for football at this level. I was very interested to see how Klimovsky's ideas were coming across, because I didn't really see Yamagata being a natural fit for him. I remember I was on Big Pod a couple of months ago, and Sapporo weren't doing too well, and I thought that would be a very good fit. But yeah, it seems like he's going to be a bit more pragmatic as he's come in midway through the season. And as you say, results are going well. I was really impressed with the young 19-year-old right-back, Riku Handa. I think he's had some involvement in Japanese like age level, like under-20 squads, but he was bombing back and forward. He looks like someone maybe, I don't know how Marinos will go in the post-Ange era, but he might be someone they would have a look at. I know that the defender I mentioned the last time was on Yuta Kumamoto. He'd been like a mainstay of their defence. They've dropped him like a couple of games before Klimovsky came in. He looks a very solid defender. He came on to kind of shore things up at the end, but I don't know if something's going on kind of off the ball there. But I think Yamagata, now they're under Klimovsky, I think they're going places. I could see them comfortably finishing top 6, where you'd probably have had them at the start of the season. I think I did in my kind of J-Pred. With the Kofu Yamaguchi, see, Yamaguchi, when I was on last time, I kind of sarcastically mentioned the number of clean sheets they were keeping. They have kept 7 clean sheets this year, but I noticed that they've conceded 10 goals in the last 5 games, no clean sheets. They're kind of returning to type. But then with Kofu, because you mentioned that no one's really got anything to say about them, so they play this kind of 3-4-2-1 formation. And I think the 4 and the 2 are really good. The one is the big problem, because it's either Brazilians who are there because they're Brazilian, or kind of square pegs in round holes like second strikers or wingers. If you were to imagine, like, if I was to just throw out a couple of names like Hiroto Goya or Akira Disaro, not really playing in J1, if they were to sort of really push the boat out and get one of those guys in, like on loan for the second half of the season, I could see them being a genuine contender. Although at the back, obviously, they were missing Mendes and Arai, who are both suspended. And I think we both mentioned in the green room that defence was a bit all over the place. Although I do kind of have my doubts about Mendes. It seems to be the latest sort of trend in Japan to play the ball out from the back, but then bring in Brazilian defenders who can't really play the ball out. I think, is it Kaká at Tokushima they've brought in? Falls into the same category. But what I wanted to ask you is, I would compare like Kofu and Verdi, because they both seem to be stuck in this sort of purgatory of mid to upper mid-table finishes. And Verdi obviously have their good youth system and they recruit well out of universities. Kofu recruit well out of universities like Hasegawa, Sekiguchi, Torikai have come in this year. I think Nakamura, Nakashio last year. But they seem to lose two or three of these players like every year just before they kind of hit the heights. As a fan, would you prefer that kind of way? Or are you more a fan of the kind of Kita Kyushu or what might happen to Ryukyu sort of roller coaster ride? Like, any thoughts on that?
Oof, that's philosophical. Yeah, you hit me with a sucker punch of that's like Ehime proportion. I feel like Kita Kyushu now. You've done an Ehime on me. I think it really depends. I mean, I'm a fan of an unsuccessful team back home, so it always used to annoy me when you get like. You know, you have to listen to a lot of tripe in the media about how, you know, Newcastle fans are having a hard time because they've only been in the Premier League for like 25 years in a row, or, you know, Arsenal fans are having a terrible season because they're only going to finish fifth and be in one European final, you know, this kind of thing. So, I think it's probably important to bear in mind success is relative at this point before I say anything else. But I think what you've done really, really well, Johnny, is you pinpointed where Kofu are missing a player, because when I watch them, they always seem to be a player or two short. But I can never work out where it is. And I think they have struggled. I'm still not sure that system with the three backs is best for them. Yeah. Because you need, like you said, I actually think playing a system with three centre-backs, if you like, that's actually a more specialised position than a lot of coaches seem to think it is. Mm. In the same way that delving deep with my Euro 96 hat on, being a wing-back, people thought any left-back or right-back could play wing-back. Yeah. In a sort of five-man defence, and it turned out it's actually quite a specialised position that not everybody can play. And I think in that three-back system, the centre-back is probably the easiest position to play.
Yeah.
But either side of him, you need probably a specialist or someone who's very versatile. And yeah, like you said, a player like Mendes, I'm not sure, is the answer. And I think, you mentioned that in the pocket. Who's it there? Was it Koki Arita?
It seems to be it was William Lira, and then they had Mitsuhira, the man from Oita, I think was in that game.
Mm. And I think Shusuke Ota has gone to Machida this year. He's quite a good, blows a bit hot and cold, but he's quite a good player. Yeah, I think, they're always just short of one or two quality players, I think, up at the top end of the pitch. They often have a sort of a battering ram in the form of, a William Lira or Barry Spindler, if you want to do a deep cut, from back in the day. But I think a player like that would probably be someone who costs money, to be honest. Yeah. But then again, I mean, if you talk about Verdi, they are able to produce players who are like technical enough to play in that pocket without spending the money. So if you picked up like a raw talent like Ryoga Sato from Verdi, for example, and plonked him in that position in the Kofu team, it would be interesting to see how he would do. I mean, I know you were hot on, Tomoyamiki from Jeff?
Yes.
Perhaps he could be a player who would play, if you switched it to having maybe one top and two shadows, he could be one of the shadows behind a big target man. So I think where Kofu fall down is, I think the manager that they have right now, Akirito, he's like a kind of, fifth place is probably about as high as his imagination can take that team, I think.
Yeah, but when I told you, when I was waiting for you before we came on, I forgot who Kofu's coach was and had to look it up in the Mekan.
So it sounds that what I've just said about him sounds like really harsh criticism, but I don't mean it to. I think it's just factual that, like, if you remember when they got into the playoffs, they kind of abandoned any kind of tactics and just tried to kick, I forget which, was it Tokushima they played against? I remember being really disappointed that the idea was just like to out muscle and, you know, use physicality to get the job done. It didn't really work, and that's as close as they've been to promotion since. So I think maybe they might need a kind of just an injection of a bit more invention, I think. They're just a bit short of, like, you know, the one or two players short of being a top two side, like perennially, like you said, yeah. I think. So, yeah, I don't know who would be a good fit, but I think definitely it would probably be a player that they either have to unearth from university or from a youth team product, or it would have to be a player that costs money. Because those players that can turn a game in that part of the pitch, usually you have to pay for them, don't you? So, yeah, I don't know. But I think, yeah, with Kofu, I'm never sure whether to be impressed that they're always fifth because of, you know, it's not the most, I think it's probably hard to attract players to go there. For example,
yeah, it's a tough sell.
It's a small town club, even though they get pretty good crowds. You know, it's an athletic stadium that suffers a lot with the elements, I think, considering how close it is to the mountains, obviously, even though it's a beautiful, picturesque setting. I'm not sure how much that appeals to players, to be honest, especially if they have other options on the table. So, yeah, I don't know what the answer is, really. But I do think... I think maybe Akira Ito might be ready for it. Could even be a step up to J1, to be honest, for a smaller J1 team. But I think Kofu might... They look to me like they're a bit stale, might need some new ideas.
Change of scenery, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting to see Yamagata kind of come into the fore. And then if you look at the way they've kind of, you know, started to play with a bit more kind of swashbuckle up front, and that's something that Kofu could probably do as well. I think it's probably fair to say the Brazilian players that they've got not setting the world on fire at the moment at Kofu.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But then they let Dudu go, you see, to Machida. That's another one.
He started one game at Machida this season as well.
Yeah, that's right. I suppose with the quarantine and stuff, we're kind of out of I'm out of the loop on my Brazilian J-Liga news. But yeah, I think Kofu are always one or two players short, and I don't really see how they can get around that. But then again, fifth place, perhaps not the worst place to be. You know, I think Omiya would probably swap with them, wouldn't they? And Matsumoto would probably swap with them. So yeah, we should give them credit where it's due. Okay, I'm conscious of the fact that you're probably going to get the security guard coming to check on you soon in your office, Johnny. So if you're okay, we'll just take a quick look ahead to the games coming up this weekend. In round 20. So the bulk of the action's on Saturday, June the 26th. This week, quite a few big games, I would suggest. So we've already mentioned, Nagasaki hosting Iwata. So fifth place hosting second place, and two in-form teams going head-to-head. The leaders, Kyoto, are at home to Okayama. So first place hosting 11th. Niigata take on Mito. That's third place hosting 10th. And Ryukyu face Matsumoto. That's fourth place against 17th. I suppose that'll be Nanami's first game in charge at Matsumoto. And I believe this is behind closed doors, this game, due to the coronavirus situation in Okinawa as well. The other games on Saturday, Akita against Sagamihara, the battle of newly promoted teams, if you will, although that seems like a long time ago now. Tokyo Verdy host Tochigi. It's Yamagata against Kanazawa, and Kita Kyushu against Jeff Chiba. So I think there's eight games on Saturday. There's four big ones and four miscellaneous ones. Johnny, which one should we keep an eye on?
Well, the obvious one is obviously like Nagasaki Jubilo, like we mentioned earlier. If Nagasaki win, that's them right back in the title fight. One kind of word of caution, though, I think, was it Nagasaki have five clean sheets in a row, Jubilo have six, so maybe if anyone's on the transfer market prediction league, maybe 0-0 might be quite a solid bet for that one. I think the other one I put down was obviously Ryukyu against Matsumoto, the start of the Nanami era. And yeah, like you said, with Ryukyu, we're not really sure what we're going to get this year. I get the feeling that could be like a 3-0 home win or a 3-0 away win, which I think is my problem in the prediction league. I can always see the result going either way. And what about you? How do you see that one going?
I think if Matsumoto score three goals in a game this season, I'll be very impressed. but I think Ryukyu, they've been pretty good at home. And they've also played behind closed doors a couple of times already. So I think Ryukyu will probably be okay, and we'll probably win this game.
And Jeff's flag got a big display in the zone last time when it was behind closed doors, didn't it? Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. You can't keep a good man down. So yeah, I think Matsumoto, I mean, they were so poor against Omiya in this round. It's very hard for me to see Nanami turning it round in a few days. But yeah, Ryukyu, like you said, it's very much you don't know what you're going to get. What about Niigata against Mito? You expect Niigata going
to
win?
I wrote entertainment next to that one because, again, Mito are masters of... It could be absolutely anything in a Mito game, couldn't it? Obviously, that Niigata have the problem that I think Takagi will miss out. If Mito has just broken a bone in his face, he could essentially play with the mask on. But, I mean, again, they can play like Homma, Taniguchi, Romero, Frank and Suzuki, which is a frightening front four. I think there'll be goals. So 3-2 Niigata. What say you?
Yeah, Mito. That's the one guarantee is that there will be goals. I think really. Yeah, it would be good to see Mito play against Mito.
Yeah.
But apart from that, yeah, I don't have anything to add to your sensible analysis. So yeah, I think that'll be an exciting game. Kyoto against Okayama. Kyoto are going to win 1-0, aren't they?
Well, I think that this, talking of training matches, because Kyoto's home strip looks very much like an Okayama home strip, so it'll be a bit like an Okayama training game, so that they might feel quite at home and go and steal the points. But yeah, I would agree, Peter Utaka, either scoring or assisting a 1-0 win would probably be quite a sensible prediction.
Good point on the kits. I think they might actually be the same kit, just with different colours, and it might be the same design, in fact. So, yeah, fair enough. Okay, and real quick, I don't know if the Sunday games have got anything for us to comment on, really, but yeah, Sunday, June the 27th, the rest of the round 20 games, so Kofu against Gunma, Machida hosting Ehime, the kind of game that Machida have messed up a few times already this season at home, I think, and Yamaguchi against Omiya. Would the Orange Derby there, Yamaguchi against Omiya, be the one to pick?
Yeah, I think the Saturday's definitely got the heavy hitters, hasn't it? Yeah, Omiya, like as Mike said, so few points like so far into the season. Omiya just have to win that game, don't they? They cannot afford to lose that. You were so positive about their performance at Matsumoto. I think they might eke something out, but then again, Yamaguchi are one of these teams, like you mentioned with Gunma. You watch them one week and you think, yeah, they'll go down, and then you watch them the next week and then they'll be fine. I think they need more from Kazuma Takai. If he can do something, they'll be all right, but I'd probably tip Omiya. And Machida, I think it's quite an important game for them because, as you say, Ehime is the classic kind of banana skin they've been slipping on all season. And then, yeah, Kofu Gunma, 1-0 Kofu, I think. Yeah. Any more thoughts on that?
No, I can't see Gunma. I can't see Gunma doing much away at Kofu. Maybe one of the 40 yarders from the defenders will maybe reach the target this week. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, Genki Omai, you can never bet against him. It's the kind of game, I think the bigger the game, the more he likes to step up, I think.
Yeah.
So, if he's in the mood, it could cause Kofu some problems. I tell you what, though, mentioning Kazuma Takai, he might not be a bad fit for Kofu, you know.
Yeah, I was surprised he stayed at Yamaguchi, like him and Joji Ikigami. I thought they'd be ripe for being taken away.
Yeah, I think we were all surprised when Kazuma Takai stayed. I don't know what incriminated evidence they've got in the front office there to stop him from leaving, but yeah. There we go. All right, Johnny, on that note, thanks for the preview of the weekend games. I think I kept you a bit later than I promised I would, so sorry about that. I think we got into it, didn't we? Had a good chat. So, thanks for coming on. It's always great to talk to you and hear your considered and thoughtful analysis. So hopefully I'll have you back on again soon and we can see how things have been going in J2 again.
Yeah, thanks again for having me, Johnny. It's been my pleasure. It's been very fun. I hope the listeners enjoy it too. And yeah, I hope to be back on soon.
Yeah, all good. Fantastic. Yeah, thanks again, Johnny. If you are listening right now, which you would be, otherwise you wouldn't hear me say that. Mike Innes is going to be along in a moment with the J Talk Short Corner segment, rounding up all of the latest J3 news. So that's all for me and Johnny on J2 this week. But stay tuned. Here comes Mike with the J Talk Short Corner.
J-Talk Extra Time. Hello everyone and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on last Wednesday's Emperor's Cup ties for J3 teams and on the weekend league games in round 12, as well as previewing the fixtures coming up in round 13. Before the main business, a quick look at some items of J3 news since the last pod. A couple of injuries and a couple of new signings. Katare Toyama have further strengthened their attacking options with the arrival of Brazilian Matheus Leira dos Santos. Matheus has been without a club since March, but prior to that was at FK Kukeshi in Albania. He has previous experience in Greece and Denmark, as well as his home country. The 26-year-old is expected to join the Katare squad after a medical and two-week quarantine. Yujin Fukui, a forward who turns 18 in the middle of next month, has joined Kamatamari Sanuki as a specially designated player. Fukui signs from coach Zdravko Zimunovic's former employer, Aioi Gakuin High School. On the injury front, at the heart of Tegevajano Miyazaki's successful debut J3 season, midfielder Kazuki Chibu will be out for 4 to 6 weeks after injuring his knee in the Round 11 game at FC Gifu, while Fukushima United captain Hiroto Moraoka fractured his collarbone in the Round 9 game against Azul Claro Numazu and is expected to be out for 6 weeks. Next up, a brief look at the two Emperor's Cup second round ties involving J3 teams that took place last Wednesday, the 16th of June. YSCC Yokohama were thrashed by Kashima Antlers. At halftime it was 4-0, by 78 minutes 8-0, with Ayase Ueda getting a second half hat-trick for the J1 Giants. With 7 minutes to go, YSCC did manage to get themselves on the score sheet. Substitute Onye Ogochukwu picking up the ball on the edge of the area, dribbling round a couple of defenders and slotting past the keeper for a lovely consolation. 8-1, the final score. It was a successful evening for Vanrari Hachinohe against Yokohama FC. Hachinohe went ahead in the 63rd minute when Furie keeper Yuji Rokutan fumbled Kazuya Niwa's cross, allowing Takumi Shimada to score. 11 minutes later, Niwa set up Yuki Aida for a smart finish from the edge of the area for 2-0. The Hachinohe defence, comfortable all game against top division opponents, was only breached with a couple of minutes to go when Kleber bundled over the line at the far post. It ended 2-1 to Hachinohe, who play Shonan Bellmare in the third round. On to the weekend's league action, and there were two games on Saturday the 19th. An uneventful goalless draw between Kagoshima United and Hachinohe, quite the week of travel for them, and a more dramatic match at Iwate Gurugia Morioka, where struggling Azul Claro Numazu were the visitors. Coming into the fixture off the back of their Emperor's Cup giant killing of Vegalta Sendai, Iwate went in front in the 9th minute when the quick-thinking Taisuke Nakamura turned and hooked a loose ball over goalkeeper Masataka Nomura and in. Not long afterwards, though, Numazu shocked the home crowd by scoring both their 6th and 7th goals of a barren campaign within barely 90 seconds of each other. First, Kotaro Tokunaga's inch-perfect pass played in Ryo Watanabe, whose clever angled shot trickled into the far corner for the equaliser. Then, Junya Takahashi dispatched Tatsuya Anzai's cross with a towering header to put them in front. Promotion-chasing Iwate were back on level terms in the 31st minute, Brenner meeting Nakamura's pass with a rocket of a shot which gave Nomura no chance. Pushing urgently for a winner in the second half, Yutaka Akita's side twice hit the woodwork, and in the 90th minute, Han Yongte's perfectly judged pass set up Brenner, who outran the defender and sent a low shot inside the far post. Final score, Iwate 3, Numazu 2. Iwate Gurugia Morioka may not be a great side, but as we'll see in this episode, the best teams in this division certainly are not great every week. What we can say, though, is that at their best, Iwate will give anyone in J3 a difficult game, and that compared with 2020, they've improved to a remarkable degree, with 10 points more than at the same stage last year. Amazing as it may sound, Gurugia are among the contenders. On to Sunday, when J3's top two teams were both taught something of a lesson by sides well down the standings. FC Gifu couldn't break down a gutsy, hard-working FC Imabari defence, and proved themselves vulnerable to two superb pieces of shooting, while a lackluster Katare Toyama fell victim to AC Nagano Parseiro, rejuvenated and riding high off their 8-1 victory in round 11. At Imabari, in only the 7th minute, Gifu lost Yosuke Kashiwagi to injury, and a quarter of an hour in, they were behind, Jun Arima sending in a cross to the far post, which was converted by Takafumi Yamada, aided by less than alert defending from Wataru Hashimoto and Haruki Mitsuda. 14 minutes later, big striker Valdemar showed a different side to his game by neatly laying the ball back to Arima, who fired in a first-time shot from 25 yards to put the team joint bottom of the table 2-0 ahead. The game could have turned on the hour when Ryohei Yoshihama's shot hit the bar and bounced straight to the inrushing Tetsuya Funatsu, whose powerful half volley was well saved by homekeeper Tomohito Shugyo diving low to his right. Shugyo was busy again 13 minutes from time, first blocking a close-range effort from Shota Nakanishi before scrambling to his feet and dashing across the area to collect the loose ball. That's the kind of incident that can galvanise a team, and in the 85th minute, Shugyo rose to meet a high ball with a confident punch which fell to Jun Arima, who turned tail and raced upfield in classic counter-attacking mode. 35 yards from the Gifu goal, Arima looked up to take stock of his options, quickly dismissed them to cut inside the defender and lash the ball into the top corner for a stunning goal. Meanwhile, at Nagano, Shuto Kamara snapped up a half chance to put Parseiro ahead in the 20th minute. Toyama didn't seem to be at the organisational races, as evidenced by the fact that it was winger Shoma or Toizumi who was the closest man when Yuki Morikawa rose to head in Kento Kawata's cross for 2-0. When Toyama were able to get the ball into the opposition area, Issei Tone's low shot was blocked by Nagano keeper Kengo Tanaka. Cue celebrations and fist bumps among the home defence, growing in self-belief and a sense of their own potential. Conversely, when early in the second half, Parseiro captain Kenta Hirose got a header on target, Katare keeper Yohei Nishibe fumbled it over the line and Toyama were three down. Nishibe blundered again in the closing seconds, letting a corner slip out of his hands for Tomofumi Fujiyama to blast into the roof of the net. So Gifu, divisional leaders at start of play, were beaten 3-0 at Imabari, and for previous frontrunners Toyama, it ended in a 4-0 loss at Nagano. Not that contenders Roasso Kumamoto or Tegevajaro Miyazaki made the most of their rivals' defeats, as they were held to home draws by lowly opposition. Against Gainare Tottori, Kumamoto went in front 10 minutes before the break through Naohiro Sugiyama, who met a punched clearance with a sweet half volley through a crowd of players. Roasso rarely looked like extending their lead, the closest they got coming when Castro Tales got to the line and broke into the penalty area to set up Shuhei Kamimura, whose scuffed shot hit Hayato Asakawa and bounced wide. Tottori's 88th minute equaliser came when Hayate Sugi delivered a cross to the far post. Kumamoto keeper Yuya Sato stretched to push it away, only for the ball to fall to Daichi Ishikawa, whose pinpoint lob picked out Hiroto Sese to head in. Another game that a team with an eye on J2 were unable to put to bed. Against Kamatamari Sanuki, Miyazaki dropped points at home for the first time since the opening day. Ryo Watanabe gave them an early lead, latching on to Ryosuke Maeda's through pass to slot inside the post, but the advantage lasted only 3 minutes as, in yet another goalkeeping error, Shunsuke Ueda failed to hold on to a high cross, leaving Ikki Kawasaki to poke the ball over the line. Sanuki nearly went in front when Mark Ajay Kurita spotted Ueda off his line and fired in a sharp, improvised effort, but the home keeper was able to get back and make the save. On the hour, though, Kamatamari did take the lead, Takumi Komatsu getting the better of Kenji Dai to meet a corner and head in. A bullet header by big substitute Keigo Hashimoto 15 minutes from time levelled things up for Tegevajaro, and the game ended 2-2. There was one further Sunday fixture involving two teams hoping to climb towards mid-table, and it was an unexpected thriller. YSCC Yokohama were 2-0 up inside 10 minutes at home to Fujieda My FC as first Yutaro Yanagi was unmarked to receive Yuma Funabashi's cross and score from 10 yards. Then Kento Dorate was similarly untroubled as he fired home from just outside the area. In the 16th minute, it was the YSCC defence's turn to switch off as their former striker Takayuki Miyamoto picked up a through ball and converted inside the post to bring the score back to 2-1. And Fujieda equalised 5 minutes into the second half when centre-back Kim Jung-ya met Jun Suzuki's corner with a powerful header. 20 minutes from the end, the game swung back in YSCC's favour as the MyFC backline and keeper Takuya Sugimoto made a mess of defending a corner by Akio Yoshida, leaving Dodate to make it 3-2 with a comfortable header. And 12 minutes from time, the points were made relatively safe through Yoshida's neat finish to a counter-attacking move. Substitute Tsugatoshi Oishi grabbed a poacher's goal for Fujieda in injury time, but it finished YSCC 4, Fujieda 3. The team with a bye were Fukushima, who returned to action in round 13. So what do these results mean, not just for the league standings now, but the season as a whole? The top three places are occupied by Gifu with 22 points from 12 games, then Iwate and Toyama, both with 21 from 11. But there are no teams performing to a standard consistently higher than anyone else in the division. Iwate's win, the draws for Kumamoto and Miyazaki, and the losses for Gifu and Toyama mean only 3 points separate the top six teams, none of whom are averaging 2 points a game as a rule of thumb for title or promotion winning teams. J3 watchers have to trade the absence of any notably strong teams for the increased likelihood of an exciting promotion race. Looking up rather than down, Nagano's defeat of Toyama means they join the small bunch of teams in mid-table. Coinciding with their recent improved results, Paseiro coach Yuji Yokoyama has changed half the starting lineup. And while I don't think in qualitative terms they're suddenly 7 goals better than Tottori or 4 better than Toyama, confidence, especially for key players like Naoki Sanda, can clearly have a measurable impact. Among the 6 teams who form the grouping at the bottom, wins for YSCC and Imabari saw them jump up the table. Against Gifu, Imabari again looked a better side than their league position would suggest, and as with Nagano, they're ones to watch outside of the top teams. The bottom 3 places now are occupied by Numazu with 10 points, Sanuki with 9, and Tottori with 8, all from 11 games. To look briefly ahead to round 13 of the league season over the weekend of the 26th and 27th, there are 5 games on Saturday, all of them in one way or another pitching higher ranked teams against sides lower down the table. Of course, we've just looked at how matches like these turned out in round 12. But Iwate are at home to YSCC, and in a fascinating matchup, Toyama host Imabari. Then there are away trips for Miyazaki to Fujieda, Kumamoto to Sanuki, and Fukushima, who make the long haul to Tottori. Then on Sunday, there's also the chance for Gifu to put some more points in their promotion pot as they host Kagoshima, and Numazu have a potentially tough match at home to resurgent Nagano. The team with a bye this week are Hachinohe, who returned to action in round 14 when they're at home to Fujieda. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.